This is Fresh Air. My name's Terry Gross. My guest is Tony Bennett, one of the consummate interpreters of American popular song. His singing has withstood three decades of music industry trends, and he continues to be a favorite of both jazz and pop audiences. With many hits behind him, Tony Bennett's signature remains the song he made famous in 1962.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
When I spoke with Tony Bennett, we played a few of his recordings and talked about the songs he sings and the composers who wrote them. Many of America's greatest songwriters are represented in his repertoire. Bennett told me that whenever possible, he likes to meet the songwriters whose work he performs.
Because, you see, what you have to do is do what the composer has in mind. And the more you could analyze it and trace him down and find out exactly what the composer thought of when he was doing the song. And each composer has a different, like Richard Rodgers, when he was alive, he just wanted to make sure that the artist did it exactly like he wrote it. He didn't want any changes. Whereas Harold Arlen is completely different. Harold Arlen said, hey, look, use my song as a tool. Do it any way you want. You want to jazz it up? You want to waltz it up? Whatever you want to do with it, just as long as it works for you. He didn't care how much you improvised on it. So each artist, each composer is completely different with how they want their songs interpreted. But the golden rule with being a popular singer is to do what the composer had in mind. Try and interpret a song the way he would have liked to have had it done.
Usually sing the verse of a song before mm-hmm. you sing the song. Can you usually see a relationship between the verse and the song itself? Because so many times people are really surprised by how the verse sounds when they're unfamiliar with it.
Well, I'm always thrown a little by it. Sometimes someone will play a game with me and say, what song do you think this is?
You know,
and it's so clever. And if I'm not familiar with the verse, I'll really get stuck on what the chorus is. But sometimes there is a hint of it in the verse. I think that the best verse I've ever heard was written by Ira Gershwin on my favorite tune, All Love Is Here to Stay. He says, the more I read the papers, the less I comprehend the world and all its capers and where it soon will end. Nothing seems to be lasting, but that isn't our affair. We've got something permanent, I mean in the way we care.
You have beautiful enunciation with the lyrics that you sing, but the enunciation is never overstated in any way. Do you do that consciously? And are there syllables or vowels, consonants that you know have to be accentuated?
Only if they have a musical sound. I'm always thinking of how beautiful can I make this sound? You know, if it sounds musical, I'll lean on the vowels very much, you know. They're beautiful vowel sounding. Any sounds that are a great excuse to make it sound even more musical, I'll kind of accent a sound that really sounds like an O or, you know, an ah. It's a musical sound. It's a musical. It's almost like the Italian language, a very musical sound. And I try and stay away from anything hard or difficult, you know. I'll drop that and minimize that, but I'll really lean on the more melodic sounding vowels. And Joe Jones gave me a tip, the great drummer. He said, just really concentrate on the word love and don't worry about the other words. He said, they all come out anyway.
Let's listen to another recording, and we're going to hear a Johnny Mercer song that was a great hit for you, and this is I Want to Be Around. So let's listen to it, and then we'll talk about it
okay. After
we hear it.
Be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. Somebody twice as smart as I. A somebody who will swear to be true as you used to do with me. Who'll leave you to learn
that misery loves company. Wait and see. I mean, I wanna be around to see how he does it when he breaks your heart to bits. Let's see if the puzzle fits so fine. And that's when I'll discover that revenge is sweet, as I sit there applauding from a front row seat. When somebody breaks your heart like you, broke
my. I Wanna Be Around, sung by Tony Bennett. What's a Johnny Mercer song? Can you tell us the story of how it was written?
Oh, there's a terrific story connected with that particular song. Sadie Vimmerstedt is a housewife in Youngstown, Ohio. And she wrote a fan letter to Johnny Mercer. And she said, I want to be around to pick up the pieces when somebody breaks your heart. She said, Johnny, she said, that sounds like you. And she said, please write a song with that idea in mind. She's an amateur songwriter. So he loved the letter, and he loved the whole idea of it. It sounded like Johnny Mercer. He finished the song and gave her 50% of the song, and luckily, I Want to Be Around came out after I Left My Heart in San Francisco, so it took a big ride and became a hit, all, you know, as big as San Francisco, you know, sales-wise. And Sadie Vimmerstedt is still collecting royalties and takes trips all over the world and goes to Greece, and I get cards from her in all these wonderful places, far-off places, and once a year she'll take a vacation with the royalties of that song.
How did you get to record the song?
Well, because Mercer got it to me, and he was, I mean, this is America's greatest, you know, music poet. I don't know anyone who can endorse what the definition of true talent is more than Johnny Mercer. I mean, this man, you know, from Moon River with my Huckleberry Friend and all these wonderful catchphrases that are truly Americana. And, oh my God, he wrote Black Magic and One for My Baby. But then he goes on, and as you keep looking at his repertoire and all these wonderful songs that he wrote, you just realize the contribution he made to America. He's a wonderful citizen of the United States.
Did you know I Want to Be Around would be a hit? Could you guess that?
You never know. It's up to the distributor. It's up to the public, finally, you know. It's up to how many times it's played on the radio. It's what kind of campaign, the timing of things. If you have to get lucky and all of a sudden, no matter what you do is right. You know, you could get into these bags where everything you do starts becoming right. It's happened to me a couple of times in my career, and I've been fortunate to have the public on my side. You know, thank God for them. They've always supported me, and it's so wonderful.
Let's listen to another recording. This is one with Basie, and we're going to hear you singing Lerner and Lowe's I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face. So, again, let's listen to it, and we'll talk about it afterwards. And my guest is Tony Bennett. The session was from the mid-1950s with the Count Basie Band.
I've grown accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune she whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out,
and breathing in. I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again, and yet I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. I'm very grateful she's a woman and so easy to forget. Rather like a habit one can always break, and yet I've grown accustomed to the trace of something in the air, accustomed to her face.
Tony Bennett with the Count Basie Band, recorded in the mid-1950s, Lerner and Lowe's I've Grown Accustomed to Her Face, from the musical My Fair Lady. That's a song I thought of myself as not liking until I heard your version of it.
Thank you.
What attracted you to the song?
Well, I was in love at the time. I'm always in love for one thing or another, either life or people. So I was very much in love, and I just thought of this one person that I was in love with when I sang it. And it made it all happen.
I remember on the show Abby Lincoln had said that when she sings a lyric, she feels like she really has to believe the lyric, because if you sing songs, you become those songs. You start living what it is that you sing. On the other hand, Mabel Mercer says that when she sings a lyric, she doesn't live the song. It's a song, it's well crafted, and she sings it, and she won't even change the gender. You know, if it's a love song that's written to a woman, she'll sing it with that gender. Where do you fit in with that? Do you feel like you live your songs?
I'll reiterate that I try and do what the composer has in mind. I do change the lyrics to make them, if I love a song and it's really written for a woman, for instance, a song like No One Has Ever Done This. There's a song that Johnny Mercer wrote, When a Woman Loves a Man. Now, I don't have to change the lyric on that, but most women sing that song. They understand that. The women sing that song, but yet a man can sing that song because it's about women who love men individually and fall in love with one man. I just gravitate to, it sounds terribly unintellectual, but if I get goosebumps, there's something to it. You know, if something moves me, if I hear a song or a performance that I really like, I'll just say, there's something to it. Let's get into that song.
I find as a radio producer, there's records that I really love that I feel uncomfortable playing because the lyrics are so offensive in one way or another. Some of them because they're so incredibly sexist, and others because, like in Shaking the Blues Away, the verses, there's an old superstition way down south. Every darkie believes that troubles won't stay if you shake them away. It's just offensive to hear lyrics like that. Does that ever happen to you that you like a lyric, but you just can't? You don't want to sing it?
Oh, plenty of times. Yeah, there's certain songs you just really have. There's one, The Glory Road, was Paul Robeson made famous years ago, and it's a tremendous spiritual song that stops a show right in its tracks. It's a fantastic song, but, you know, it has all the Glory Road and all that Eisenmuggen kind of language, you know, that were written for that. So it was pronounced exaggerated that a black man sings this song, you know. It was quite an insult. I mean, it's dated now. So I did correct it when I sang it, you know, instead of saying The Glory Road, I'll say The Glory Road, which is the correct way, you know, and it's still a dynamite song. that happens. You know, that happens. It does. It gets some of these things terribly dated and terribly offensive.
Let's listen to another one of your songs, and this is another one that I really didn't have much feeling for as a song, but I've changed my mind about it after hearing you singing it.
Thank you.
And it's Julie Stein's "Make Someone Happy," which I also thought of as being a kind of a pleasant but corny song. But I don't know, you invest something in it that gives it a lot more musical depth than I thought it had.
Well, I think Bill Evans had a lot to do with that. You know, the way he plays that piano. I mean, he'll just make everything sound so believable. And also, it's the kind of philosophy, it is a cliche and it sounds corny, but it really works. When you give, you get. I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, it's like all the Oriental philosophies in the world kind of bring this out, you know, that brings it out. I mean, if you take a chance and contribute somehow or other in a congruous way, you get a reward for it. Something comes back at you by contributing. And for that simple reason, that's why I like pop songs so much. Instead of writing a whole intellectual novel, an essay on or a book on something like that, sometimes in 32 bars you get the whole essence. It's almost like haiku poetry.
Well, let's hear Julie Stein's "Make Someone Happy" with Tony Bennett and Bill Evans, and this is from their second album together.
Make someone happy, make just one someone happy, make just one heart the heart you sing to. One smile that cheers you, one face that lights when it's near you, one girl you're everything to. Fame, if you win it, comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy, and you will be happy too. Comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found a just one someone happy, and you will be happy too.
Tony Bennett with Bill Evans from the second of two records that they recorded together, and that one is on a album record label called Improv, which was a label that Tony Bennett co-owned in the mid-1970s. How did the second session happen after you recorded the first album with Bill Evans?
Well, it was received so well by the connoisseurs of the music business, you know, that we decided to do a second album. And luckily that we did, because now we have two full albums of, you know, a good 24 sides or so of Bill Evans and myself. And there's something I cherish very much. I just love it. I just love the fact that I sang with Bill Evans.
I was looking at some photographs of you the other day, mm-hmm. and one of them is you with some real Bobby Soxer-looking type fans. How have your fans changed in the years that you've been singing, and the nature of fandom?
Well, you know, at first, you just go through the whole syndrome. I mean, it was pretty funny. For the first 5 years of my career, there was just one loud scream throughout the United States. That's all I remember. I'd be singing these soft little sweet songs like Blue Velvet, and no one was listening. They just screamed at me, you know. I'd get to a town, and it was all Bobby Soxers and all this. And that's the beauty and the adventure of the whole entertainment business, is that you finally take on all the challenges, and you finally go from one challenge to another, one group. And then after doing so many shows at the Paramount Theater, 7 shows a day and all that, I've decided to work for the family rather than for one group, instead of the teenage group. You know, I started thinking in terms of singing for the whole family, so that the grandparents could understand it, the teenagers can, the husbands and wives can, and the children. And it's much more enjoyable now to me to sing for the whole family than to one group, demographic group.
So how did your material change?
Well, it hasn't changed that much, funny enough. I kind of did songs that everybody liked. And funny enough, I think I found myself today. I found a little hint as to who I am. I was being interviewed a little earlier, and someone said to me, what kind of a singer are you? And I said, well, I'm from New York City. In New York City, the schooling you get usually is from a black teacher or a Jewish teacher. And in my life, I've gotten to love the teachers I had. I had some wonderful teachers, very bright and very with it. And I said, I'm an Italian of Italian descent, and I sing black and Jewish music. This is what I do. I'm very influenced by the jazz artists, but I love the music of Gershwin, Harold Arlen, Irving Berlin, Arthur Schwartz. These are the composers of the 30s, you know, just fester my mind. They just kept me going creatively. I'm in love with the music that they wrote and what they contributed to the United States, to the greatest ambassadors to the United States, for the United States. I go to places as far off as Japan, Manila, Australia, no matter where I go in the world, France, any foreign country, if I sing Dancing in the Dark by Arthur Schwartz, everybody knows that song. They know Cole Porter's Night and Day, you know. Those composers of the Broadway stage and the movies, those songs that were written for Fred Astaire, are just the songs I'm in love with. Yes, every once in a while I'll go crazy for a guy like Stevie Wonder, you know, and think he's just a terrific interpreter and performer. But most of the time I get right back to saying, hey, look, these are not old songs, they're just great songs. And I also think of them as America's folk songs. I think they're the true folk songs. And what a level of folk music. What a high level of popular music. It's a great, more mature kind of popular music, you see, and it's something that'll never die out, because as long as we're existing on this planet, our songs will just become more and more amplified through the years.
When you said Jewish music, I thought you were going to talk about cantors.
Yeah, well, I studied with cantors.
Did you really?
Yeah, at the American Theater Wing. I studied with 15 cantors for 3 years, and I studied sight singing with the cantors, and they're magnificent singers, you see.
How did you get to study with cantors?
Well, it was the American Theater Wing, and it was under the GI Bill of Rights, and they were all studying sight singing, and the American Theater Wing is a wonderful school that teaches all kinds of forms of theatrical techniques, and they had a great school on sight singing.
Think that Helen
Jordan,
you in any way?
Teacher Helen Jordan, was a wonderful teacher.
Think all those cantors influenced you in any way?
Definitely, because they sing in a healthy way. They're very healthy singers, and they sing correct. You see, they sing with the bel canto thinking, and you really learn how to place your voice right. You never hurt your voice with it. You know, it becomes more and more magnificent as you go along. Now, whether you sing opera or popular music, that bel canto training, there's nothing like it, because it keeps your voice healthy, and as you get older, you get better. It doesn't diminish like a sportsman, where you finally get weaker as you get older. If you do the scales, you'll get better and better and better, and it's a wonderful exercise that works.
Some people talk about like what makes a pop singer and what makes a jazz singer. I would think of you as a jazz singer, especially when you're singing with someone like Bill Evans, although you don't scat. Do you think that one needs to scat to sing jazz, and have you avoided that for any reason?
Well, scatting is like composing to me. I mean, everybody says, why don't you compose? You know, well, how can I compete with Cole Porter? And with scatting, how can I compete with Louis Armstrong? Or how can anyone? I mean, it's silly to just go scat-a-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-da-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo-ba-dee-ba-ba-doo language. It's a musical language. And I'm so in such reverence to the way Lewis did it that I'd rather just sit back and listen to him do it and enjoy that. And another thing is, the hardest thing Bobby Hackett taught me years ago, the great cornet player, the hardest thing to do is to sing the melody and make it believable. And that's the great sound. To me, that's really scatting. You know, when you could hold on to what the composer had in mind and not change the notes and make it believable and sound fresh. It's more of a challenge. It's easy to just throw in a bleep-blop every once in a while. It's easy to do that. It's much more difficult to just sing the words.
Singer Tony Bennett.